This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly filling in for the great Anthony Pepe and his friends here on this scorcher of a Friday night. We're coming to you live from the compound here in the Boston area, and it is wicked muggy out, so I felt like I should begin the program with a hot take. Hot take involving your Boston Red Sox. I think it's time to blow it up. I just think it's time. They have too many holes to fill, and they're too dinged up. It might be a crude awakening at this point, but after the conclusion of their first half of their season, as they would term it, it looks pretty bleak. However, things begin tonight. They are immediately trailing in this game here, 1-0. But to the phones we go. Austin, who is your favorite team in the MLB for the most part?
The Guardians.
The Guardians, okay. So they're kind of creeping back into contention, making a chase for a wild card spot. Whereas the Red Sox season, it's kind of been going in a roller coaster scenario. It's been summarized in three chapters so far this season. Horrible start where they went 10-19, scorching hot resurgence where they went 20-6 in June. Then they crashed to the finish, 4-10, entering the All-Star break. Despite having a winning record of 48-45, ESPN actually gave the Red Sox a D-plus grade for their first-half performance. They also give Boston only a 32% chance to make the American League playoffs. I think Cleveland might actually have a higher odds of making the tournament this year.
Yeah, it just seems like every time they get on a roll, they just kind of fall off, and I'm not sure if they're going to make it in. I'm hoping that they have a good second half, but I'm leaning more towards them not making it.
Well, yeah, I mean, both look in a similar situation for the most part. Boston, however, does have three looming deals set to expire with Xander Bogaerts, J.D. Martinez, and Nathan Eovaldi set to enter free agency. Rafael Devers also only has 1 year of arbitration left. With the MLB trade deadline looming on August 2nd, it's decision time for Chaim Bloom. I think it's time to blow it up. Right up until that line drive ricocheted off Chris Sale's nimble pitching hand a few days ago, I was clinging to the belief that the Sox should be buyers, that they could make a run at a pennant with a move or two. Now I think they just have too many holes to fill, and they just can't compete for a World Series, at least this year. And you have the valuable pieces that you can move for assets. Do I want them to trade Bogaerts? Not really. Do I want them to trade Martinez? Also, no, to a lesser extent. But they have a lot of moves to make this upcoming deadline, and the Red Sox have assets to gain. We'll be right back here on the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Now time for the Beantown Rundown.
All right, boys, let's do this.
Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back to the Diehards program here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly, and now we are going to dive into one of our usual exercises. It's time for the Beantown Rundown. Only this time, instead of Anthony Pepe, it's going to be me asking the questions. Anthony is out in Western Massachusetts getting ready for a food truck festival, and we wish him well out there. Tonight, I'll be asking the questions to our producer, Austin Rodriguez. Austin, are you ready?
As I ever am.
Well, you know the drill. I ask the questions in advance. You ponder your answers. Then I will read them back one at a time, and you let the hot takes fly. So, first question I have for you. The MLB trade deadline is in less than 2 weeks. Juan Soto recently turned down a 15-year deal worth $440 million, and now the Washington Nationals have indicated to the rest of the league that they are taking offers for deals. I ask you, Austin, do you want your favorite baseball team in the mix? Number two, Aaron Judge was recently asked by a reporter if he'd have a message for a young Yankees fan that had wished for him to come back next season. Judge did the opposite of what most were expecting. Being under the gun, he basically confirmed in an awkward fashion that he might not be returning. Where do you see Judge playing next year? Vegas Insider, number three, recently updated their list of favorites to win the American League pennant. They list the New York Yankees at -130 odds to win the World Series, or the American League Championship, I should say. Ridiculous odds, by the way. However, the Houston Astros aren't far behind, sitting at -200. Are you buying in on the Astros to punch their ticket back to the championship? Number four, we have to ask at least one Boston-based question, or my boss will not be happy. The Red Sox begin the second half of the season at 48-45 and start the second half on a 10-game homestand beginning tonight. However, they are two games back of a wildcard berth, and things do not get any easier. In your mind, what will have to happen in the next 2 weeks for the team to become sellers? And last, which NFL team do you see as a dark horse this year? Pretty simple, open-ended question. Anyone can answer it. You pick any you want. Now, back to the original question. The MLB trade deadline is in less than 2 weeks. Juan Soto recently turned down a 15-year deal worth $440 million, and now the Washington Nationals have indicated to the rest of the league they are taking offers for deals. I ask you, Austin, do you want your favorite baseball team in the mix?
Yes, but I don't think they're going to do it.
And why do you think that is?
I mean, first of all, the ownership is known for being a little on the cheap side, so I don't think that they'd be willing to hand out a big contract for him. So that's one reason I don't see it happening. And even if it did, it would only be for like a couple years before they let him go again. And I'm not sure if Soto fits with the team's trajectory. Like, I think Soto's going to go to a team that's like in win-now mode, not a team that's like, you know, struggling to make a wild card.
This is true. Do you think Cleveland fans would want Soto in there to make a run at a wild card, or do you think they want something more at this stage?
That's a good question. I think they would, just because we've missed the last couple of years just to like make it back. It'd be good for like the short term, but if you're thinking more long term, I just don't think it would make sense.
You see, I'm kind of in the same boat, just on a little bit more of an extreme scale. Just with the Red Sox end of things, I don't think that they want to part ways with their assets to bring in a guy like that, and I don't think their organization is going in on that trajectory. Would I want them to do it? Sure. But I just don't know if they're going to part ways with that capital to do so. Number two, Aaron Judge was recently asked by a reporter if he'd have a message for a young Yankees fan that wished for him to come back next season. Judge did the exact opposite of what most were expecting. Because he was under the gun, he basically confirmed in awkward fashion that he might not be returning. Where do you see Judge playing next year?
Honestly, I'm hoping for the Astros just because of the storylines that it would come with it.
And you're a Cleveland Guardians fan?
Yeah, yeah.
But you just wanted for the content that would come in the city.
Yankees
being
fans
in
would hate that.
Oh, I could imagine. I think Red Sox fans would be of the same mindset. Now, I know a lot of them want Bogarts back, and it's starting to become a question of, is it really one or the other? Why can't you have both? Why can't you have both? That's just me, but I'm greedy. I'm greedy being a Boston sports fan in this city for the last 20 years, watching them win one after another. Number three, Vegas Insider recently updated their list of favorites to win the American League pennant. They list the Yankees, as you just mentioned, at minus 130 odds to win the World Series. That's ridiculous. Crazy odds. And really, no one else is close besides the Houston Astros sitting at minus 200. Are you buying in on the Astros to punch their ticket back to the championship, or do you think it's too big of a hurdle?
Now, this might be recency bias, but they did have a two-game set yesterday, and the Astros won both games, and I buy it. I mean, I think that the Astros are the best team in the AL right now.
And, ooh.
Yeah, and they've had the Yankees number all season. So if it comes down to it, those two teams in the ALCS, I think the Astros have the upper hand.
Do you think any team can really somehow nip at either one of them? Could somebody pull off an upset, or do you think it's really just those two going for the AL championship this year?
Man, you know, playoffs, anything are possible, but if you're just going based on like the stats and analytics and everything, I think those two are the best in the AL.
You know what? I have a hard time arguing that point. It just seems like these two teams have just been far and away the best. The Yankees, I think, I saw a recent poll put out. They had them listed. I can't remember the exact odds, but it was just so far and away ridiculous to win the American League East at this point. Might as well just take them. Number four, we have to ask at least one Boston-based question in this, or my boss might be less than happy. The Red Sox begin the second half of the season at 48-45 and start the second half on a 10-game homestand beginning tonight. However, they are two games back of a wild card berth already. Things do not get easier, and oh, by the way, they ended the first half on a 4-10 with a 4-10 record. In your mind, what will have to happen in the next 2 weeks for the team to switch to become sellers?
Man, I don't know. Well, I think first they would have to get off to a bad start in this homestand that's coming up for them. And then I also think that offers that they can't pass up would have to pop up for just around the league.
See, I think this is a make or break time. If the Red Sox go, like, I don't know, 3-7 or like 2-8, God forbid, I think you just have to blow it up. I even opened my take with it to start the show. I just feel like there's just too many holes for them to fill. And if they do go into and become buyers at the deadline, I feel like they're just going to add minor pieces. And eventually Bogarts, Martinez, and those guys might walk. They just haven't really given an indication that they're going to bring those guys back in. If I was the Red Sox, I'd start looking at some farm systems. If the plan is to eventually part ways and just let them go, I would look at the Seattle Mariners, who have a loaded farm system. I don't think they're going to trade away Julio Rodriguez anytime soon. But looking at the rest, there are some pitchers that could definitely help. Emerson Hancock's in their farm system. Matt Brash is in there. He's the number 98 prospect overall as of this year. There's some great options there. The Arizona Diamondbacks, similar situation, loaded farm system, plenty of pitching help. Miami Marlins. Or you could look at maybe the New York Mets. Look at a team that's in contention, NL team that could need a DH soon. Maybe they could offer Martinez to bring in a prospect like, I don't know if they're going to part ways with like a Francisco Alvarez, but maybe a Brett Beatty or Ronnie Mercurio. Like, there's a couple of guys out there. Last question I have for you, however, is, in your opinion, which NFL team is the best candidate to be a dark horse this year?
My mind keeps going back to the Chargers for whatever reason. I know they had a pretty good season last year and missed the playoffs on a because they lost to the Raiders, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was overtime, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. They could have if they would have tied, they both would have made it, but.
Derek Carr was having none of that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I just think that another year of Herbert being able to get some more experience. I mean, he was already close last year, so I think this is when he takes that next step and brings the Chargers with him.
I think it's an interesting take to label the Chargers as a dark horse, but you kind of have to in a weird way, just because of the division they're in. In reality, I think any team from the AFC West could emerge as a dark horse team this year. It's just which one's going to survive the blows. It's going to be the toughest division, in my opinion, in the NFL to play in this season. And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw three teams get in or none get in. Who knows? We'll see how that goes. For me, I don't know. My gut wants to tell me that Mac Jones is going to turn into the next Tom Brady and make the Patriots a sudden dark horse. By the way, their over-under for wins this season is set at 8.5. That's one and a half less than last year, and they made the playoffs with a rookie quarterback. The AFC just got that much better. And so Vegas is down. Vegas is down on my Patriots right now. Looking around the rest of the league, I don't know. Trying to think of one off the top of my head. I just can't really. The one I've been pointing to is the Denver Broncos. Again, looking at that AFC West. With Russell Wilson, is he that missing piece that finally puts everything together? It feels like Denver had everything except a quarterback the last couple of seasons. I would like to see them go on a decent run here, and I'd like to see Russell Wilson return to the pinnacle of the NFL. I'd like to see him back in the playoffs. Feels like the NFL is better when he's there.
I say my whole issue with Wilson is how much of it was him last year and how much of it was the Seahawks. Once I figure that out, I'll have a better base to gauge it off of.
He was dealing with that finger injury, right? On his throwing hand last year? That I mean, probably played somewhat of a role. He wasn't getting the ball downfield, and that was the biggest difference. He wasn't able to get the ball downfield to his guy, DK Metcalf, and that was a game changer for them. I wouldn't be surprised to see that completely turn around as we approach the new NFL season with training camp coming up. Any lines in your opinion that you're looking out for this upcoming training camp?
Really just the Watson suspension.
Oh, of course. I mean, aren't we all watching that? That will change the course of the NFL. Whoever, wherever that situation develops, whether it's 6 games a year, 3 games, who knows? The NFL season completely changes with Deshaun Watson's decision coming down from the top. Well, anyway, that'll take us to our next break here on the Diehards here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly, and when we return, we'll be joined by a very special guest from Barstool Sports, Dan Greenberg, a.k.a. Stool Greeny, will join us to talk NBA hoops. Stay tuned.
On the Sports Map Radio Network, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back to another edition of the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly filling in for Anthony Pepe tonight from the compound here in the Boston area. Our first guest is one you are all familiar with. He covers the NBA for Barstool Sports and is the biggest Celtics fan that I know. His name is Dan Greenberg, I should say, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line now. Greeny, are you there?
I am, guys. How's it going?
It's going well tonight. Greeny, yourself?
You know, I'm still in recovery mode from the last, last final collapse. But so far, I'm doing all right, I guess.
I think we were all living and dying with you on Twitter the entire playoff run, for sure. I mean, you just, you're the voice of Celtics Nation, so I think you speak for everyone. So let's begin with your team, the Boston Celtics. Heading into the summer, I was wondering how Brad Stevens could possibly improve this group, given that they did just make the NBA Finals. But my word, he did it. What were your thoughts on the additions of Brogdon and Gallinari?
Yeah, I think if any logical person came out and said, hey, they're going to trade for Malcolm Brogdon and give up Aaron Nesmith and a ham sandwich, you would be roasted on the internet. You would be roasted on any platform you were on if you thought that that was the type of package to bring in a player like Brogdon. Somehow Brad Stevens got it done. Then he goes out, he brings in a career 39-40% three-point shooter in Gallinari, who's an absolute fit for the city, for the system, for what they needed. And then he found, you know, a pretty high upside guy in the second round in the draft who looked great in Vegas, led the whole summer league in assists. So, you know, I was like you. They didn't need much heading into the summer, but the way that they were able to address their needs and not really give up any player of substance is almost, you know, unbelievable that it was actually people were willing to help him despite how successful they were, you know, the previous season.
Do you think we have to worry about any potential lineup issues such as a logjam when it comes to playing time between someone like Brogdon and, let's say, Marcus Smart? Or do you see this as a seamless transition between playing styles?
Well, I think, you know, now in the summer when everyone's feeling great, I don't think there are issues. You know, if they go on a stretch where maybe they lose three of four and guys are sitting when they would usually be playing, you know, it's really going to be interesting to see how Ime handles that. But, you know, I think if you ask most Celtics fans, one of the most impressive things of his first year was that he didn't really put up with any, you know, of the drama. He sort of, you know, laid down the law and players respected him and responded to that. And I also think the fact that they're so close and in such contention for a championship, that those are the types of situations where you're usually going to get the buy-in. But, you know, we have to see what happens once they experience their first road bump. But for now, in mid-July, I'm just going to go with everything's going to be awesome.
I like it. Well, we were all disappointed when the oft-discussed Evan Fournier trade exception expired a few days back, but does that truly signal the end of the moves for the Seas, or does Stevens have something else up his sleeve?
Yeah, I mean, for 600 days, we were, you know, pretending or imagining of who they would end up using that TPE on. Sadly, it's now gone forever, but I can't imagine that he's done. I still think their depth in the big man spot, especially that third center, is still a glaring need. So whether that's bringing in a veteran minimum player or maybe using part of the money from the Wancho TPE, that's about $7 million. They also have the Dennis Smith, the Dennis Schroeder TPE, which is right around $5 million. So they do have ways to round out the end of their roster, and I think they need to do it because right now, if you look at their depth, especially at the big man spot, and you factor in the hope that you can load manage Al Horford, you have to be weary of Rob Williams, you know, playing too much. I do think they need to go out and find that big man. We just have no idea who it's going to be.
Well, that's another question I wanted to ask you. There are some big men still out on the free agent wire, and I think one that Celtics blog pointed out the other day was Dwight Howard. There's a couple of names out there. Hassan Whiteside, is he still available?
I think so, yeah. I think he's still out there. Yep.
Yeah, who would you pick out of the remaining guys on the big man market to come in and be that third guy off the bench for the Celtics?
Yeah, the names are tough, right? It's guys that are either pretty long in the tooth or have some pretty glaring issues on one end of the floor. But I think, you know, when I look at it and I dive into it and I try to convince myself that things will be better on this team, I think the answer is Dwight. I just think what they need is sort of in line with his skill set. He gives you that vertical threat. He can catch lobs. He can, you know, hit the offensive glass. He's not the worst defender in space, and he's still an elite rebounder who has sort of accepted this reserve big man off the bench role these last few years, and he won a title doing it. So if he's willing to accept the veteran minimum, I do think given how they play and with Rob being really their only consistent vertical threat and sort of rim protector, I think I lean Dwight. But then I watch some, you know, offensive highlights of prime Boogie, and I'm like, well, maybe they should go the DeMarcus Cousins route. But I think Ime values defense and guys that are willing to buy into a role. So for me, that's Dwight Howard.
Did you happen to see the recent photo that came out with Jaylen Brown, Kanye West, and Kyrie Irving?
I did. I did. It made some waves among the Celtic community.
Well, what were your thoughts when you saw that?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, Jaylen is a smart guy. I think, you know, he's an innovative thinker. And for me, it's not as much of an issue. I think, you know, people are nervous that he's with Kanye and he's with Kyrie and he's going to convince them to leave the Celtics. But I don't really feel that way. I think, you know, Jaylen is a star in his own right. And people who know this team and know the game sort of treat him that way and hold him to that standard. So I don't pay too much attention to it, but I also have been known to live in denial at some stages of my life. So I think I'm hoping for the best and just, you know, praying that there isn't some master plan that's going to ruin my life.
I think the best course of action for the Celtics is to see Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown emerge as the stars together and find a way to win as a championship core here in Boston eventually. We'll see how that pans out. But jumping back to the team in the meantime, what were your thoughts on J.D. Davison's performance in Summer League?
Unbelievable. I mean, I was there for the entire 10 days. I had to see it in person. You know, all I'd really known from him was what YouTube told me, where he was just this super athletic guard who was dunking on everybody. But he only had, I think, one dunk in the entire preseason. But the way he was passing the ball, his vision, his ability to play in the pick and roll, I mean, I almost couldn't believe that he, you know, went 53rd in the draft with that skill set and that athleticism. You know, it didn't shock me at all when 2 seconds after their summer league ended, he was signed, you know, to the two-way. And I just think he has the foundation. You can teach a guy to shoot. You can teach a guy to, you know, run an offense. But his natural ability and tools were by far and away the most impressive of anyone I saw in Vegas. And it could potentially be one day a position of need. So 53rd picks don't generally pan out, but it was impossible. I mean, he led the entire summer league in assists, which is not something that I expected. So, you know, his ability to throw lobs with guys and have that connection with people who he's played 2 seconds with was intoxicating. And I just, you know, I hope he makes it and we'll see what he does in Maine because, you know, that's probably where he's going to get most of his run. But he was by far and away a real big surprise in summer league.
Could you imagine a connection with Robert Williams in the next couple of years?
I know, I can't wait. I need it to be. I'm like staring at my calendar wondering why it's not October yet so I can just see that first lob. It's going to be, oh my, I can't wait.
Well, just looking around the rest of the NBA, a couple of questions left for you. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving still have yet to be moved, and it appears any noise about a potential blockbuster is quieted. Do you think they end up moving this offseason?
I don't. I think they end up coming back in Brooklyn just because the Nets don't have to do anything, you know, unless they both plan on sitting out the entire year, which I think is, you know, almost slim to none. I think, you know, when they don't have the leverage. So, you know, the Nets aren't going to do a deal, it seems like, just to do one and get them, you know, for 60 cents on the dollar. So I think when they look at the landscape of, you know, what the packages are, it's probably in their best interest to just put their tail between their legs and come back and actually try and put forth a legitimate effort, because we haven't seen what the Nets look like with all three of those guys active. So it's been fun to get us through the dog days of the offseason, but my betting money would be everyone's still in Brooklyn.
Last question I have for you, Dan. What did you think of Danny Ainge's latest swindling of the Minnesota Timberwolves? I don't think it was as extreme as the KG Pierce deal. I think Gobert still has plenty to offer, but I still think he brought in a king's ransom in this case. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was nostalgic. I can't lie. I mean, it made me teary-eyed to know that he still got it and he can still swindle and he can still have the guts to make, you know, franchise-altering trades. But at the same time, I think when the Jazz first brought him in, it was really at the height of all of the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert drama. So you only bring in Danny Ainge if you're ready to completely tear it down and bring it back. So you hope that those picks pan out. The Western Conference is tough. You know, the Timberwolves don't exactly have the most successful postseason track record, so it's great to see him at it. Well, it sounds like he's going to do the same thing with Donovan Mitchell and get another 6 or 7 picks. So the Jazz might just, you know, they may run the draft for the next 3 to 5 years.
Greeny, looks like we're up against it. Greeny, we're up against it. I wanted to say thank you for joining again on the program, and where can listeners find you?
Barstool.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And welcome back to the latest edition of the Diehard Show here on the SportsMap Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly. Our next expert on the Progressive Guest Line is Merrill Marshall. Merrill is a host of a Boston Bruins podcast, The Causeway Kings, and he is one of the most passionate hockey guys I know. Merrill, welcome to the SportsMap Radio Network.
Thanks for having me, Brendan. Really appreciate it. You sound great, and can't wait to talk some hockey, man. Thank you for having me.
Well, Merrill, it's great to have you on the show. I believe you have been a big proponent of the Bruins searching outside of their market for their next coach. They answered your prayers and inked Jim Montgomery to a new deal. Did you like the move?
I absolutely like the move because overall I think he's going to bring some different ideas. He has a track record of success in the NHL. And he's been had track record of success everywhere he's been, and he's going to come in and not be sort of beholden to the old school Bruins ways. He's a new wave thinker, and I also think overall, you know, they couldn't afford to go with a first time coach or a coach with limited experience. I think with the roster they have, they need to a coach with some NHL experience and has had some success at the NHL level. So overall, and all that, I like the hire.
After so much debate as to whether the Bees should bring in David Quinn as the next man behind the bench, he ends up in San Jose. Do you like the hire from the Sharks' perspective?
I do like the hire on the Sharks' perspective. On a few fronts, I think he's very familiar with Mike Greer, the new GM out there. I think the Sharks are in a little different spot than the Bruins. They're really starting from scratch. And overall, I think he's learned a lot. I think he's learned a lot from his job as a New York Rangers head coach previously, and I think he'll be a good fit for them.
How do you think he would have fared here if he had actually signed the deal?
That's a good question. We'll never know. Overall, you know, I think he would have come in and had some success as far as I think they would have been a contender for the playoffs. And they kind of put it out there that he was a finalist. A little bit of a lukewarm response, I'd say, from the Bruins fan base, but overall, I think he would have some success. They'd be contending for a playoff spot. I think maybe the ceiling with Jim Montgomery is a little bit higher.
Interesting. You think that's just because of the defensive perspective on that side of it?
Yeah, exactly. Defensive perspective, having some success already in the Dallas Stars organization. And he's been a success everywhere he's been. And the other thing I think that really was a difference maker was that his assistant recently with the Blues, who had a lot of success with younger players like Jordan Kyrou, helping them tap into their potential. And they're hoping that he has that same kind of success with the Boston Bruins with their younger players, like not just Jake DeBrusque, Trent Frederick, Jack Sednika, Oscar Steen, amongst others come to mind.
What are your thoughts on the Patrice Bergeron situation? Will that get resolved anytime soon?
I think it'll get done by the start of camp. That's obviously not that's not saying a whole lot, hell of a lot. A lot can happen between now and then. I think there, from what I have read up on the situation, is that it's a little bit of a unique situation. Over 35-year-old contract, incentive-laden deals are a little different because they have to massage the cap not only for this year coming up, but also next year. It's applying to the cap is applying to next year, his contract, as well as potentially Krejci's. They're also probably going to have to move out a few people. So there's a lot of moving parts to it, but I do think the deal gets done by training camp. I just think they have to move a few things and set a few things first before they can officially announce it.
It seems like he's been in constant communication with the team. Don Sweeney has made numerous discussions during his press conferences that he has been in touch with Bergie. Jim Montgomery has come out and said that he's been talking with Bergeron as well, says he's basically like a second coach, but nothing has been done yet. Do you think this is an issue of being paid? Do you think it's health-related, something else? What do you think is the reason for Patrice Bergeron continuing to stretch this out?
I think it's more of a contract situation where they're just trying to work through all of the details. I don't think they would have this much contact with each other. And Jim Montgomery freely talking about it on Ottawa radio show. If it wasn't something that was very close and happening, I think, like I said, they might have to move a few guys out. There might be a buyout involved. And they also have to try and get all their ducks in a row as far as contracts going forward for next season, so the numbers and everything sort of reflects and works out. That also includes Pavel Zacha, who they traded for as well. So they've got a lot of things they kind of have to check off the list before they can officially announce those contracts. And I'm saying contracts for with Krejci in mind as well, because I do believe, in my opinion, Brendan, that they are the Krejci is waiting for Bergeron to sign first. Then I think he signs as well.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Do you think the Krejci news single-handedly hinges on Bergie's decision? How critical is it to bring both of these guys back at this stage, given the way the NHL has just drastically changed in a few weeks?
I think it's very important for the potential of competitive balance, being a player in the Eastern Conference playoff race, and also just from the fact that, let's face it, the Bruins' center depth isn't really where it needs to be right now. It's improved slightly, obviously, with Pavel Zacha, although I think, especially if they do sign Krejci, I think Zacha will spend some time at wing as well. And it's also interesting, I think that maybe the Pavel Zacha, another factor in it, they bring Zacha in, another countryman of David Pastrnak. Maybe that helps persuade Pastrnak, who is also coming up on a contract, to sign long-term.
Well, speaking of Pavel Zacha, the Bruins traded Eric Halla for his services. Essentially, it was, in my opinion, basically taking a bet on a young lottery ticket. Somebody who has a high ceiling but hasn't really shown it just yet. High draft pick, top 10 pick in the NHL, but he still hasn't gotten to that point. Do you think he has the chance to blossom in Boston? What can fans expect from him?
Well, I think he's a big player with a lot of potential. He was a top pick in the 2015 draft, and I think this is another reason, you know, you look at the Bruins system, how they were able to sort of figure it out with Jake DeBrusk. Obviously, moving him to the top six, he helped blossom. I think they're thinking the same thing with Pavel Zacha. And also a factor in that is obviously the new head coach, Jim Montgomery. I think that they are hedging their bets as an organization, Sweeney and Neely, that Jim Montgomery is going to bring the best out of Pavel Zacha. Coaching-wise, giving him confidence and putting him, I would tend to think that he would fit somewhere on that second line. I think Zacha is going to be a middle six player, a guy who can move maybe up and down the lineup. But that is what they're hedging their bets on, that Jim Montgomery is the young player whisperer that really goes a long way and helps these young players on the Bruins realize their potential.
Do you think Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, and the Bruins are done with any other moves for right now, or do they have something hidden?
That's a great question. It has to be the right deal. It was interesting today. I saw Oliver Bjorkstrand went for a third and a fourth round pick. That might have been something maybe the Bruins could have been in on. Obviously, it all is cap dictated. So if there's an ancillary move that can be made to bring in a player, I think the Bruins may still do it. But I think right now, though, overall, if I was hedging my bets, Brendan, it seems like their roster is pretty set as of right now.
Definitely could probably use some depth for Brad Marchand, obviously Charlie McAvoy. But, yeah, I think what can they do at this point? Unless they want to get crazy and start moving guys out and shuffling the cap around, I don't really think they can do much.
No, I don't foresee it either. Unless there's something that is that maybe we don't know about, a creative move. I mean, I also think when you look at them defensively, I think, you know, the third pair is pretty much set. I actually like the way they played at the end of last season, Clifton and Forsberg. I think on the second pair, I think you're going to see Zboril play his offside. And, I think there's a possibility that you're going to see, you know, your top pair going into next season before McAvoy's back is probably going to be Lindholm and Brandon Carlo. And I hope Brandon Carlo can recapture his form from a couple of years ago when they went to the cup final, because in my opinion, he was one of their most important, best players, and one of the most important players overall.
Jumping around to the rest of the NHL, what has been your favorite signing around the rest of the league this summer to this point?
Well, how can it not be Johnny Gaudreau shocking the world and blowing the collective heads off Canadian hockey fans you know, that just sort of came out of left field. But reading between the tea leaves and some of the scuttlebutt in some of the players, I thought Mike Commodore had some interesting comments about how the American players playing in Canada during the pandemic and the lockdown, it took a toll on them mentally. And I think it was a situation where Gaudreau wanted to be in a market that was a, closer to home and maybe a little quieter, that kind of fits his lifestyle. And I think likewise, you might see the same thing with Tkachuk, Matthew Tkachuk, because he has informed the Flames that he is not going to be re-signing either. So, I mean, that is an unreal mass exodus right now. And, you know, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you got to be petrified of the same thing happening with Austin Matthews down the road in a couple of years.
Who are some of your biggest winners and losers from the offseason in terms of the rest of the league? Any teams stick out to you?
Teams that stick out to me, I think Columbus got a lot better. I think Columbus was determined to make a next step. I think Columbus has had a reputation around the league as being a place where, you know, we think of some players who have left, whether it was Bobrovsky or Panarin, that, you know, there was a constant undertone of players didn't want to be there. I think they wanted to make a step forward. They were in on Ryan McDonagh. They went extra long on term for Erik Branson. And they wanted to show the league that they are a potential destination. They just re-upped Patrick Laine. So I think the Columbus Blue Jackets have had a very interesting and good offseason overall.
What were your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Finals and how they eventually panned out?
Well, I think, and by the way, I was just going to say, Tampa Bay, I thought, also had a pretty good offseason. Even though they lose McDonagh, they re-up, they get Sergachev, they get Chernak on long-term deals. They lose Palat, but I think overall they identify the players they wanted to keep and keep that core intact as much as it can be. I thought the Stanley Cup final was absolutely amazing hockey, amazing theater. The two best teams that everybody thought all season going toe-to-toe. A lot of respect for both teams. The injuries they fought through, just amazing. And look at Tampa Bay, guys going down the tunnel, coming back. That is a team that is going to be a tough out for the next few years. And the same thing with the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, hats off to them. How can you not like a guy like Jared Bednar? Talk about a guy who paid his dues and worked his way up the coaching ranks. And really, overall, two teams that were self-made, especially the Colorado Avalanche, who went through a heck of a time rebuilding to get to this point. And congratulations to them. It was a great cup final. One of the best in a long time.
Well, Mel, we're wrapping up here on the show. We're up against it. Where can listeners hear your work and find you on social media?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Causeway Marshall. Merrill Marshall, Causeway Marshall on Twitter, 1L. And my the podcast Causeway Kings that we do, you can find it on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts are released, basically. And, you know, I always have hockey takes on the Bruins and the NHL in general. So I really appreciate you having me on, Brendan. We definitely got to do this again. And can't wait to see you, by the way, on the Causeway Kings again. You're a great, great guest, great friend of the show to have on.
Well, great friends work together well, I always say, Merrill. And thanks again for joining us here on the Sports Map Radio program. Have a good weekend.
You too. Have a wonderful weekend.
And we're about to take another break here on the Diehards. We'll be right back here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Don't touch that dial.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And back here on the Diehards show, presented by the Sports Map Radio Network. I'm Brendan Connolly, taking you up until 10 o'clock here on a Friday night. Austin Rodriguez is producing for us back at the studio in Houston. Austin, how are you doing out there?
Pretty good. Hot, but pretty good.
It's hot up here, too. Probably not as hot as down there. A little bit muggy in this end of the world. We just got off the phone with Merrill Marshall of the Causeway Kings Hockey Podcast. Good guest. Very passionate, as always. Always brings the hot Bruins takes. And we also spoke with Dan Greenberg of Barstool Sports, who I think is still coming down from the run that the Boston Celtics just embarked on in the second half of their season. Can't blame him for that. It was one of the most historic runs any team has been on. Unfortunately, they came up just short in the NBA Finals, but I will still have to thank him for his contribution to this program tonight. Before we turn our attention to the next hour, I want to throw out my NBA take. And jumping back to the Celtics, I think they should look at bringing in another big man. We talked about this with Greeny. It's critical. You cannot put pressure on Robert Williams to play out the entire season. You need him healthy for the playoffs. He is a game changer. The Seas are arguably the best team in the league if he's out there and the team is clicking on all cylinders. So, to ensure this, they should explore the big man market, as Greeny hinted at. However, I don't think they should go after Dwight Howard, but rather Hassan Whiteside. This take just kind of came to me as the show progressed. Sign Whiteside as your big man at the end of the bench. Just looking at some of Whiteside's stats, a few years ago when he was in Miami, he was averaging about 17 points, 14 boards a game. That was 2016-17. He's obviously taken some injuries over the last couple of years, as most big men do as they age. But last year, still put up 8.2 points per game, 7.6 boards. I think that's very reasonable off the bench. Don't ask him to do too much. He probably won't deal with as many injuries. Getting a guy like Hassan Whiteside, I think, can help put the Celtics over the top. Who am I to say? I might be crazy, however. Keep it right here with us here on the Die Hard Show here on the Sports Map Radio Network as we turn our attention to the second hour of the program. We'll be right back here on the Die Hards.